Today's show is brought to you in part by Peloton. Can't find a workout that keeps you engaged? Peloton is an immersive cardio experience with real-time features that will always keep you coming back. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use promo code LOCKED to get started. That's L-O-C-K-E-D at onepeloton.com to get started.
You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome to episode number 565 of Locked On Raptors for Monday, September 16th. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter, as always, at WoodleySean. Find the show at Locked On Raptors, where you can find links to every single episode of the podcast. And, of course, please make sure you're checking out the Locked On Podcast Network team-focused shows for all 30 NBA teams. We've got Locked On Fantasy Basketball going strong right now. If you're getting ready for your drafts, Josh Lloyd has you covered to a ridiculous degree of detail over there. Also, if you're an NFL fan, we got all the team-focused NFL shows. And starting on September 30th, we'll be launching the Locked On NHL Network, something that I am actually the manager of. So if you are out there and you like the NHL and you are looking for a Locked On show to cover you, don't worry. That's going to be coming a couple weeks from now, September 30th. We're going to launch with a bunch of shows, and we've got some great hosts lined up for you. So stay tuned for that on the network. And I think that's all the housekeeping stuff. Please subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And without further ado, let's get to today's show, where Marc Gasol is definitely still drunk somewhere in Spain after the FIBA World Cup Championship Parade, his second parade of the summer. I'm sure there was plenty of rosé on hand. And it seems like a pretty good time to talk about another one of our pressing preseason questions for this year's Toronto Raptors. And joining me to talk all about what Marc Gasol's role with the team is going to look like this coming season, which is pressing question number two, it's our pal from The Score, from the Pound the Rock podcast, which is, for my money, the smartest NBA podcast going right now. It's Joe Wolfond. Joe, what's up, buddy?
Not too much, man. Thank you for that extremely generous intro.
Yeah, it's cool. You guys are so good.
Yeah.
You guys.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. yeah, no, I don't know how much truth there is to that claim, but I'll take it.
It's smart and engaging, which is a hard combination to find. We got engaging over here, but not exactly smart on this here old podcast. Unless you're on, then it becomes smart. So we'll use your intelligence to talk about Marc Gasol, who happens to be one of the smartest basketball players, this is maybe of all time. He's on the Raptors, which is always fun to think about. He just, of course, won gold for Spain at the FIBA World Cup. We're not going to talk about that very much because, let's be honest, who watched those games? It was really cool to see Marc Gasol win. He did 33 points in the semifinal overtime game. That's awesome. But after Canada fell out of that tournament, I kind of lost interest, not going to lie. Joe, were you kind of the same with the FIBAs?
If I'm being perfectly honest, I was never really in to begin with. I watched like some of one of the Canada games against Australia, but yeah, for the most part, I just been like kind of taking a break from basketball. Mm-hmm. I was kind of in tennis mode for a while, and that was capturing my interest in a way that international basketball wasn't. So I just, yeah, I didn't really commit to the World Cup at all.
Yeah, that's honestly probably the way to go about it. It was disappointing, and I know it was fun to watch like Serbia and stuff until they lost unceremoniously to Argentina and Luis Scola and his wife seducing looking haircut. But I am not upset that it's over. I'm happy that we get the NBA to come. It looks like we avoided any serious injuries in FIBA. I know Jason Tatum got hurt. Marcus Smart got hurt too, I think, maybe, but I think it looks like everyone's mostly fine and should be ready to start the season, so that's a nice relief. And we can look ahead to the coming year, Marc Gasol being the topic of today's show. I mean, first of all, are you worried at all about like the amount of like wear on Marc Gasol's body going into this year, considering he just played into June for the first time and then also in the World Cup going to the gold medal game? Or do you think like, is there a chance that he becomes like the load management guy this year for the Raptors? Because I kind of think there's maybe a shot that happens.
I mean, to answer the first part of your question, I'm like, everything's relative, I suppose, but I'm not worried about anything this coming season. Like, there's just worry doesn't really enter the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think given the fact that, look, it was a double overtime game, I guess, and I didn't watch it, so I don't really know how he came by those points. But just seeing that he dropped 33 points in a basketball game was like, what the hell? How did he drop 33 points? He seems like he's in fine form, and, you know, to the point about load management, I don't know if it's going to be about him sort of skipping games so much as just his workload being scaled back. And we already saw that last season, right? Yeah. Like, he came over, you know, the first two-thirds of the season with Memphis, he was playing 34 minutes a game, and he comes over to the Raps and he's playing 25 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a bit of load management right there, and I think, you know, that'll probably continue to be the case with him hovering around, you know, between 25 and 28 minutes probably. And you sort of continue to stagger him and Serge's minutes. Like, they'll play together a bit, I think, just because the Raptors' power forward situation is a little bit hazy.
Mm-hmm.
So you might just sort of need to play them together more than you did last season. But I think the workload in general is going to be, you know, not super intense. And, yeah, maybe they'll rest in the odd game and try and aim for like the 65 to 70 game mark rather than having him play, you know, 75 plus. But I don't know, I guess just like it's not like he's the kind of person who has typically relied on, you know, quickness or athleticism or anything like that. Like, obviously it's important for his body to be in good shape, but like his intelligence to me just like adds like that extra, you know, 25% that maybe an extra half step would otherwise give him, like,
mm-hmm.
his ability to think the game and just sort of be one step ahead gives him certain advantages, I think, that maybe make it easier for him to survive the grind of a long season.
Yeah, it really does feel like he's going to, at age like 38, 39, still be doing useful things for like a decent team off the bench or something, just because of the way he thinks the game and how smart he is and just sort of like his touch and his passing genius. Those are all skills that are going to age pretty well. And the fact that he's starting to shoot threes a little bit as well certainly doesn't hurt either. I didn't realize he was 44% on threes after the trade last year in the regular season. That's pretty nuts. Obviously, that went down a bit in the playoffs as he was terrified to take them a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And that's something they're not going to be able to afford this year. And that's sort of the question,
so, like,
right?
That was, like, it was 50... It was 52 total threes that he shot with the Raps. So,
yeah,
like,
that's,
you know,
true. Yeah.
He was very discerning about the shots that he was taking from outside. And I kind of think that needs to change this coming season. Like, he can't be so discerning. Like, they really need him to space the floor because they do not have a lot of floor spacers.
Yeah, that was going to be sort of my next sort of line of questioning is, as we look at how this team lines up, we can talk about load management and stuff, and if he's playing 25, 26 minutes, maybe that's enough. But I do wonder if there's going to be sort of a real serious uptick in his usage and just the way that the Raptors use him, because he said himself, and it was pretty clear when the trade was made, like, okay, he's the fifth guy most nights. It was either him or Danny Green, whatever the hierarchy is you want to, you know, put out there, whatever. But like, he's not an active part of the offense in terms of like actually having the ball in his hands. You know, he'll set great screens and all that stuff, and he'll make smart passes to keep the offense flowing, but he was not having plays designed for him or anything. There were the odd pick and pop here and there, but that was about it. And because of what this team is now, when you lose Kawhi and then to a lesser extent Danny Green, there's less three-point shooting. But the most glaring obvious hole in this team to me, and I think will sort of be what keeps the Raptors from being like an insanely good offense once again, unless they can find some culture reset magic or something like that, which I guess is on the table, is like, there's just not a lot in the way of creation. And, you know, you could, I guess what Gasol's logical sort of role in filling that gap in is, I guess he has the ball sort of at the elbow a little bit more, picking out cutters and stuff. The things that we thought maybe he was going to do a little bit more often when he came, but they didn't really do that much. And there was, you know, some weird sort of back and forth with what lineups he was playing with and who he was playing with a lot, and he seemed to have a lot of chemistry with guys like Norm and Fred VanVleet in those situations where he was having the offense flow through him. When he was with the starters, it wasn't so much that. He was just kind of a screener. How do you envision Marc Gasol being part of the offense this year? Do you see him being like the third option behind Kyle and Siakam? Do you see him, you know, continuing to take a step back and being just more of a screener and facilitator? What do you see for Marc Gasol's just overall role within the offense, and how much is he going to be counted on to help create in the absence of Kawhi?
All right, so first off, I'll just like say something to address what you're saying about like the amount of touches that he got last season, which I actually think he was touching the ball quite a bit. Like, and even if you look at the numbers in terms of front court touches, like after the trade, he was basically getting the same number of front court touches per game as Lowry was, more than Siakam, and like a few less than Kawhi. So it wasn't so much like about how often he was touching the ball as like
it's a usage thing.
When he did have the ball.
Yeah.
Which is like, 16% usage, and like, you know, not really ever looking at the basket, just like not looking to score, and more so, you know, trying to facilitate than he was looking for his own offense. And that's the thing that like I think is going to have to change, just because there isn't, you know, like you said, that kind of high-end creator on this team, and there isn't a whole lot of self-creation, I guess. Like, Kawhi obviously provided so much of that, and even for Lowry at this stage of his career, like, that's just not really his game anymore. So really, like, Siakam is the only guy who you can look at and say, like, that's a guy who's going to be able to create some of his own offense. And I guess how much of that Gasol can actually do at this point is an open question. Like, in the past, maybe like the post-up has been a part of his offensive repertoire, but like basically last season when he was posting to pass and not to score. And like his scoring efficiency out of the post was like in the, it was like 25th percentile. It was very, very bad. So I think that like he can be a really effective creator. It's just got to be more outside in than it is inside out, because I think teams have sort of like caught on to the fact that he's not an effective post player. And like you saw in that Sixers series, they were totally happy sticking Tobias Harris on him and being like, okay, like go one-on-one and try and score in the post. They're not going to send those double teams. Like, they're not going to give him the opportunity to sling those passes because they know he's capable of that. And they kind of know at this point that he's not really capable of scoring one-on-one in the post the way that he once was. So I think the idea of him playing more sort of on the perimeter and making passes out of the high post, facilitating from the elbow, drawing defenders out to the three-point line, and like I said before, just like having maybe a little bit less of a discerning eye when it comes to the shots that he's willing to take from three-point range, and, you know, maybe even like attacking closeouts a bit, you know, putting the ball on the floor, a little show and go. Like, I think he can be super creative and super effective at that. I just think it's maybe got to start from the outside, whereas in the past it might have been a little more like inside out.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the nice things about this year's team and the lack of worry about anything that you alluded to off the top. It's just like he can afford to be a little creative and afford to sort of go outside of, and maybe it's too late on in his career at 34 to like adopt new skills, but he has enough touch and sort of wherewithal, I think, to do what you said and attack closeouts and work from the outside in. It is kind of interesting because, like, the one real glaring thing that Jonas Valanciunas did better than Marc Gasol was scoring from the post. And that became just, like, a thing they didn't need last year. They really, really needed Gasol to tie things together and sort of just bind all the disparate parts of the starting lineup into one, and it obviously worked to great effect. But you would, I mean, I wouldn't rather Valanciunas be on this team than Gasol, per se, but his skill of being able to just, like, get buckets in the post at a rate, you know, for post-ups, which is an inherently inefficient play, for him to be even like sort of efficient at that is kind of remarkable. And that's just not what Gasol is going to be. It's always going to be a, like a sub, you know, 0.8 point per possession play for him. And that's just, he's not going to be able to add that. So yeah, it's going to have to come from different places. And I wonder if maybe they'll just sort of, if you think back to like what they started to have Jonas do the last couple of years he was there, they sort of had him do some of that outside in stuff, right? Where he would run those really high dribble handoffs and things like that. but he didn't quite have the gravity to really make that into a super useful play. Like, he couldn't pop out of that and have teams really care. Like, Gasol actually does have some gravity as a pick and pop threat, so maybe that's a way to sort of loosen up the offense a little bit. It's just to have him out there, you know, running those high screens, running that handoff action, and then you can sort of leverage that into other things, and maybe defenses will have to respect him that way because they don't need to respect him as a post up guy. It's really interesting. I do, like, if you just had to like guess, I think he attempted, per 36 minutes last year with the Raptors, after attempting 13.5 shots or so with the Grizzlies, he attempted just over 10 per 36 for the Raps last year. Where would you think he's going to fall in just in terms of like pure attempts or just usage, if we want to go by that? Like, you mentioned 16 was his usage with the Raptors. It feels like it's got to be higher than that. And like, maybe that's leading to inefficiency, and maybe that's
to like 20.
Yeah, 20. That'd be nice to see. It just feels like a lot of guys are gonna have to have serious bumps, and maybe this is like, I'm pretty high on the Raptors defensively, and Gasol's a big reason for that. I am a little skeptical they're gonna be able to crack top 10 in offense, and it is just because I think, while I would like to see, just as a person who likes to enjoy watching basketball, I'm very cool with Kyle and Gasol and Siakam all bumping their usage significantly. I just don't think you're ever going to find anywhere close to the efficiency that you had with Kawhi, with that insane high usage sort of leading everything and those guys all chipping in around him. And that's maybe a very obvious thing to say. But I don't know. Do you think there's a chance they could sort of go back to that 2017-18 style where they really... And I mean, it's so weird. It seems like the Raptors are just always a top five offense no matter what. And maybe this doesn't matter and they'll figure it out again because of Nick Nurse or whatever. But do you see them sort of adopting that sort of, just out of necessity almost, that culture reset style of offense where, you know, Kyle seeds some of the constant having the ball in his hands, he's running around, running off screens and stuff like that, and there's just like constant motion all over the place? Like, do you see that sort of them adopting that? Because they abandoned that significantly last year just because the circumstances called for it with Kawhi being such a singular talent.
Yeah, I mean, circumstances is exactly it, and I think they're going to have to kind of... revert's the wrong word, because I don't see it really as a reversion, at least stylistically. But yeah, like, it's got to be more egalitarian. They don't have a guy. Like, I mean, I have really high hopes for Siakam and what he can do this year, but he is not Kawhi in terms of the efficiency that he's going to be able to generate just by isolating like 10 or 15 times a game. I don't think he's there yet. You know, if he ever gets there, like, I have really high hopes for him, but like, he has a lot of things, to me at least, that he has to prove before I can believe that he's going to be like a genuine night to night threat, to just generate his own offense to the tune of like 20 plus points a game with like 60% true shooting. So yeah, so I think it's going to have to be a lot more of those motion sets and, you know, guys basically sharing the load and moving the ball. And like, I think like Lowry and Gasol is such a good pairing because Kyle is so good at playing off of the ball, and you just know that Mark is going to be able to find him like in the right spot so often. And it's, I think it's really good for Kyle to just have somebody else who can play make and allow him to just skitter around and find open pockets of space and relocate for those three pointers. Like, I think as much as I like the offense when he has the ball, like, it is also extremely effective when he doesn't have it. And especially if you look at this roster and you think about, you know, the dearth of shooting, you need somebody playing off of the ball who can create a little bit of space. And so, you know, I like the idea of putting the ball in Mark's hands a little bit more, and have him facilitate, you know, from the elbow, from the high post.
Yeah.
And I think the offense is really, like, it's going to look pretty. I think it will, but I don't know. I mean, it's contingent on a lot of things, I guess. But you know, you said it, like, his usage can't be 16%. He is going to have to be some kind of a threat to score in order to open things up, in order to open up those passing lanes that he can exploit so well. Like, if he isn't a threat to score, those passing lanes aren't really going to be there to the same extent. Guys are going to sag off him if they don't think he's willing to shoot. They're going to play him straight up if they don't think he's, you know, a threat to score inside. And I think another important thing is, you talked about, you know, JV being a more efficient post scorer. JV was also a much more efficient scorer on the roll.
Oh, and so good.
I'd like to see, Yeah. So I'd like to see Gasol just like rolling a little bit harder to the rim and like mixing things up in terms of when he pops and when he rolls. Because I think you make things a little bit easy on a defense when if they know that the pop is coming, like they can just sit on that as opposed to like if you're keeping them on their toes and like one of I can't remember, I think it was game three in the finals when Gasol was just like really rolling hard to the basket, and it was one of his best games in the playoffs. And I want to see him do that a little bit more. Like ultimately, I think he's going to be more effective as a pick and pop guy than as a pick and roll guy, but I think you just got to mix it up a little bit and keep the defense on their toes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think the way Gasol, Lowry, and Siakam's skills sort of, work off of each other, I think there's room there for Gasol maybe to have a little bit of extra sort of space to operate in those situations. Like the thing about Jonas is that whenever he was rolling, there was never that much space for him because until just the part of the season before he got hurt against the Warriors last year, he was always playing with another big, and there's just never that much room for him to operate. And the way that the Raptors, you would figure, are going to play, like there'll be a lot of Siakam in the corner if they're running high pick and roll with Lowry and Gasol, and it just feels like it'll be more spread out for Gasol to do stuff in that situation. And because he's such a good passer, if there's any sort of cheating by defenses, if he can prove to be a pretty good scorer there, like he can pick that apart pretty easily. He can pick out cutters. Like I think we're gonna see a whole lot of like Lowry Gasol high pick and roll. Gasol catches it on the roll, and you have like Siakam or OG cutting baseline. That's gonna be something we see a ton this year. And I think those skills sort of offset each other really nicely. And it's not like Gasol is a terrible scorer around the rim. Like he wasn't good for the Raptors. He was like 58% inside 3 feet, down from like 68% inside 3 feet from when he was with the Grizzlies last year. And he was pretty bad for the Raptors in those situations. Like even on the roll, he just kind of like put up weird floaters and not really seem to have an idea of what he was doing. And I think he has more in him than what he showed in a Raptors uniform last year. And he's going to have to show that. He's going to have that touch around the rim. Like he has it. He's not like going to throw down dunks or anything like that, but there's no reason he can't be like an effective finisher catching the ball on the run and being able to make a play against like whatever center is up against him. It's not like it's like a stacked position or anything. Like I think there's some real hope there that with those skills of those guys, if they sort of go back to what they did a couple years ago before they had Kawhi, the skills of the guys they have are going to complement each other very nicely. And I think that is at least a little bit of optimism. Before we kick over to the defense for a sec, let's keep on the offensive side a little bit. And I mentioned off the top, and I think you probably remember this. Remember the first game you played for the Raptors against the Knicks? That quarter or 2 quarters, I guess it was the whole game before Fred VanVleet got hurt and then he missed a bunch of time. There was a real sort of like very obvious chemistry between Gasol and Fred, and that also extended to Norm as well a little bit. And Norm's usage was up and down, and there was just not so much in the way of sample of seeing those guys together. But do you think there's a chance that Gasol maybe sort of comes out early in Nick Nurse's rotation and sort of anchors a second unit to like start second quarters with like Norm or Fred or something like that, or Terrence Davis, like because he feels like, I don't know, I don't really trust Fred as a creator, to be honest, and I don't really trust Norm as a creator. Norm has always been better to me as a guy who's standing in the corner waiting for a swing and to attack a moving defense. And it feels like of all the secondary guys they might have, Gasol like might be the best at running a second unit offense. Do you see that being maybe a way that Nick Nurse approaches his rotation here?
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't thought about it until right now, but I think that's definitely an option. I don't, like, rotationally, I don't think anything is off the table. And you know, I think we're gonna see Nick Nurse try a lot of things this season. You know, to me, like, Fred has always been at his best when he's playing next to another creator, and like he's been to me at his best when he's playing next to Lowry, but he's also been very good playing next to DeLon Wright, and like you mentioned, he's been good playing next to Marc Gasol as well. So I think, you know, we really like don't need to rehash this, but you know, pretty much all of Raptors Twitter, I think, can agree that we like Fred playing off ball more than we like him playing on ball. And that doesn't mean that he should never play on ball, because I think, you know, as a pull-up shooter and as a creator, he still does some things that I think are positive and like you like having that in your back pocket. I just think he's so much more effective playing off of the ball. He's so much more effective as a spot up shooter than he is as a pull up shooter. He's great moving the ball. You really need the spacing that he provides. So, you know, whether he's playing alongside Lowry or alongside Gasol, I think ideally you don't want to have too many situations where he is kind of your primary initiator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get to Fred later. I have mixed Fred feelings. I love Fred with all of my heart, obviously, and the way he finished the postseason is the reason, or a big reason, the Raptors have a title. I am skeptical that he's going to be able to make good on the recency bias that seems to be sort of ballooning his reputation around the league. Although I guess it wasn't ballooned. He was not even in the top 100 on the SI 100, which people got really mad about for some reason. Anyway,
yeah, that was like, what's the opposite of recency bias? That was like, I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I know how I feel about it. I don't care. Again, this is such a weird season to cover because I don't care about anything. I just want to watch fun basketball be played by old guys who are avenging their title that they're not going to be able to defend most likely, but are going to try damn hard to do it. And Marc Gasol
you say that now.
I mean, I believe I'm captain. It's fine. I think I'll be saying that all year long, but I know some people certainly won't. Gasol, to me in particular, him and Lowry, I guess, are the two guys who sort of embody like what this team is going to be, just from like a pure joy standpoint. Like, it's a team now that there's so little pressure on it. Gasol and Lowry both have their titles. Like, they don't have to worry about like chasing rings if they don't want to. Like, they can sort of rest easy knowing their legacies are going to be cemented. And for Gasol, I mean, it just feels like, I mean, we've seen how much rosé he's drunk this summer. I think he just feels kind of liberated and chill and just happy. And I think it's going to maybe not be like a 55-win team or anything like that, but I do think it's going to be a really enjoyable team to watch. And Gasol is going to be central to all of that because of the way he plays, because he throws crazy-ass passes cross-court from like the far post. Like, he does really interesting, kind of unique basketball things, and I think that's going to really sort of lend itself well to this Hakuna Matata-ass season that is to come for the Raptors. Quickly, let's touch on the defense. Do you think Gasol can, like, anchor a top 6-7 defense, which I think this team has the capability to do, and maybe it's not even so much about the big man as it is about the wing, like the perimeter defense, and how OG comes along, and how Siakam progresses on the defensive end as well as the offensive end, and how he sort of holds up on defense under the intense scrutiny he's going to face as an offensive number one, and maybe he's going to give some back on the other end. So maybe it's not really a Gasol question, but like, are you confident, having seen what he did in the playoffs, especially against poor Joel Embiid and poor Nikola Vucevic, and all manner of other bad matchups for him, like, are you confident this team can be as good defensively as it probably has to be a real threat, to be like the three seed in the East with Gasol playing 26, 27 minutes as the anchor at center?
Yes. And I think, you know, if you're saying, can Marc Gasol anchor a top 5 or 6 defense, like, I would just say that it depends on the personnel around him.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the right personnel around him to make that possible. Just because there is so much defensive talent on this roster, and I think there is the perimeter defensive talent to make his job a little bit easier in the middle. If you're talking about, you know, presumably you're playing a drop back in the pick and roll. I know he showed at points in the playoffs that he can also, you know, do the hedging thing where he comes out a little bit higher, and that's going to be an option. But for the most part, I think you're going to have him drop back and play as close to the basket as possible. And when that's the case, it really helps to have, you know, strong armed wings who can either, you know, prevent triple penetration or just sort of stunt into the lane and deflect balls. Like, you have guys like Lowry and Fred VanVleet who are, you know, for my money, as good as any guards in the league at sort of digging down into the post and stripping guys, you know, whether it's on the pick and roll, whether it's auto post ups. Like, you have so many good help defenders. Like, I just think what Gasol does, he doesn't have to really stretch the limits of his capabilities too much to be super effective
mm-hmm.
in this particular team context. So yeah, I fully expect them to be like, I don't know, put a number on it, like top seven defense. I think that should be easy money.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously you lose a lot without Danny Green or Kawhi, although Kawhi was like hit or miss in the regular season last year defensively. Obviously Giannis knows how good he is now, but like I do think the talent maybe is a little bit less sure. Like, I think Norm can be a pretty good defender. I'm still not sure exactly what Norm is at anything, and that's part of the fun of this season. I'm sure we'll have a Norm podcast over the next couple weeks here. And like, I think OG's pretty good on ball. How he is off ball, that remains to be seen. He seems to have trouble sometimes fighting through screens because he's so big and lanky, but like, I do think there's good defensive talent within those two, and if you have those guys flanked by Siakam and Lowry, like, that's a pretty good starting point to sort of surround Gasol with. And I don't know if the defensive IQ of the entire team is going to be quite to the point this year that they can kind of do what they did last year, where it wasn't really a set defense. It was kind of just like, all right, Gasol calls up the coverage and they just go with the flow and play whatever defense works. Like, I'm not sure if they have that sort of overwhelming defensive talent, but I mean, when you factor in like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and if Stanley Johnson gets minutes, maybe they do have that much talent defensively. The offense becomes an issue when those guys hit the floor, but that's a different conversation. That's nothing to do with Marc Gasol. So yeah, I think we will probably still see some of that sort of freestyle, like Gasol decides how they play defense here and there, and like him and Lowry can decide because they're so damn smart. But you know, you could do worse than having Marc Gasol sort of dropping back in sort of the way they used to have Jonas do it, and you know, come up high when he has to, but for the most part play more conservative style and then just sort of adapt from there, because the wing defense should be pretty good, I think. I don't know. Norm, we were too late in this podcast to start on Norm, but man, I have a lot of questions. I'm optimistic, sort of, but also yeah. I have no goddamn clue, because we've seen 7,000 different iterations of Norm throughout his career, and it's been like 4 years, so who the hell knows? Joe,
I mean, he's going to have the opportunity, right? Like, that's kind of the...
Yeah.
That's where we're at. Like, the opportunity is there, and, you know, that starting two-guard job is his for the taking. Like, it's just a question of whether he steps up and takes it and can be effective in extended minutes in that role.
And I will say, if there's someone who I think in that starting five who could sneakily, if Norm gets that spot, which I assume he will to start the year at least, considering they have three more years and 30-something million invested in him, I would assume that, like, he's going to seriously benefit from playing with Gasol a lot. Like, he just... He's not a guy who has the ball in his hands to initiate and have good things happen. Like, he's a guy who needs to, as I said, like, sort of be the fourth or fifth guy that it's swinging to. And when you have Gasol there, sort of there to sort of bring out the best, like, bring out the colors a little bit, you know, like, to sort of, he's like salt and pepper. He's like seasoning to an offense, right? Like, I think he can kind of bring out the best in Norm a little bit, and maybe that's, you know, a path forward for Norm to have some success this year as a starting two. I don't know. But Gasol makes everyone better. That's the nice thing about him. He's very, very smart and makes everyone around him better as a result. Joe, do you have any parting shots about Marc Gasol before we wrap this thing up?
Well, I feel like it's, you know, the big question about Gasol that we haven't even really touched on is, like, will he be on the Raptors by season's end?
Yeah.
Are you... You know, like, have you not considered the possibility that he might be traded?
Yeah. Well, we talked about it in the last episode. We, like, went into that. I don't think he's going to be traded, because I just think... I don't need to rehash it, I guess, but I will. Like, they are going to be good enough, I think, that they're not going to be able to justify just, like, throwing in the towel for what are you getting from Marc Gasol? Like, maybe a low first, but probably a second, if that, and just some salary crap, when if you want, you can sort of just go to the end of the season, ride it out, have a fun year, and use the cap space you have this summer as your asset acquisition sort of currency. It doesn't have to be, let's trade this guy to get stuff. We could just have this cap space and use it to get stuff, whether it's you take on bad money that's got a year left or something like that to clear your books for 2021, or you just use that money and you go after, like, interesting RFAs, or you just sort of keep that powder dry. There's value in the Raptors keeping that cap space. So I am firmly against trading any of the three guys. Like, I just don't think it makes that much sense. And maybe that's because I just want to watch a low stakes season where I don't have to worry about anything, and I'm okay with that. But I don't know. Like, would you like to see him traded? Do you think that's the right way to go forward, asset management wise, or like I don't know. How do you feel about it all?
Yeah, no, I think it'll just be totally dependent on where the Raptors are at come trade deadline. Like, you know, are they kind of struggling to keep their heads above water? They're hovering around 500, or maybe they're below 500. Like, then absolutely, I think you'll see what you can get for them. Although maybe if that's the case, there just like isn't going to be much of a market for them at all, because how good a season can Marc Gasol be having if the Raptors are floundering to that extent? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I think if he does finish the season with the Raptors, that's probably a good sign for the Raptors, like that they've had a pretty good year. And I guess my follow-up question to you would be, if he does finish the year with the Raps, would you be comfortable with them re-signing him, or like what amount would you be comfortable with them giving him in terms of years and dollars?
That's a good question. I guess it would depend on what he looks like this year, right? Like, if he looks like he's sort of declining very clearly and he just can't just sort of shoulder the load that he's going to have to, then maybe you just let him walk. I mean, I'm fully on board with giving Lowry a contract next summer. Like, whatever it is, I'm pretty cool with it. I don't imagine the market will be that insane, although I guess he'll be like one of the best free agents on the market, so maybe it will be insane. I don't know, but Gasol, I think...
he might be the best free agent on the market.
Yeah, like, that's crazy. and Gasol's probably top five, if that's the case.
I'm struggling to think of one who might be better.
Yeah, I guess, like, if Siakam goes to RFA, or whoever the RFAs are, maybe, but that never really materializes into anything meaningful anyway. So, yeah. I don't know. You answer first.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I guess we're all kind of in a lather about this 2021 free agent class. And you probably don't want to do anything that compromises max salary space for that summer. So I suppose, I don't know, I've kind of talked myself into a corner here. I don't know. but I guess it would just depend on whether you're bringing Lowry back as well. You know, have you extended Siakam this summer? At something below the max, or are you having to max him out next summer? Like, all those decisions, I guess, are going to be interconnected, and they're all going to, I guess, come down to, you know, this question of whether you're leaving yourself max cap space for 2021. But in a vacuum, I feel like if you could give him, like, a two-year deal, like, let's say he basically plays the entire season at the level that he played at after coming to the Raptors last year. I feel like I'd feel pretty good about giving him a two-year deal at, like, $30 million, something like that.
Yeah, I mean,
and that would compromise your space in 2021 a bit. But I feel like at that number, you could probably still finagle it so you have max room.
Yeah, I think you'd probably do that, and maybe just sort of like structure it so that he makes more in the first year or something like that. If that's legal, I don't know the deals.
yeah, or the second year is like partially guaranteed.
Yeah, that's an option too. Like, fuck it, run it back. Bring back Kyle, Serge, and Gasol on identical deals to what they're coming off of for 1 year, and then go into 2021 with all the, like, I don't know. My judgment is probably clouded because of the title haze, and so I'm probably not going from a super like Nate and Danny approved sort of angle on all this, but like, I just want to watch Marc Gasol play for the Raptors. He's really fun. And now that the Raptors have won a title, I personally am okay if there's like a couple years here where it's just about fun. And it's just about sort of reshuffling the decks before 2021, if that's the year you have sort of pinpointed as the one you're going to try to go all out for. I also trust that Masai Ujiri would be able to move off of whatever deals probably, because he's a wizard. Maybe that's also, you know, an opinion clouded by the title haze. I don't know. But I am cool watching the fun player play for the team. And as long as it's not for, like, $30 million, I think you can probably justify it on a short deal. And I'm with you. I would not hate that. And if you run back, like, I mean, maybe Siakam this year proves that he can be more than what we even think he's going to be, right? Like, maybe he has, like, just some crazy meteoric season where he's, like, flirting with, like, top 15 status in the NBA. And you think, man, like, I would like to have him play on a competitive team before we try to sell some other star on coming to play with him in 2021. Like, if you don't have Lowry or Gasol, and yes, there are ways to fill in the roster, I suppose, because you have that much cap space, but, like, as we've just said, there's no one on the market. So maybe the best way to keep your team good and relevant and sort of in the limelight and in sort of the tier of teams that guys are going to want to come to is to just bring back Kyle and Gasol and even Ibaka, whatever. They have those guys back and you'll still be good and relevant, and then you go from there. And I think we've lost Joe, but Joe, you back?
Sorry, I'm back.
Oh, okay, yeah, sorry, I just got but no, and yeah, so I think, you know, there's an argument to be made that the best way to go forward to sell yourself as a destination in 2021 is to just keep Kyle and Gasol around and Ibaka or whatever. So yeah, I think I'm with you. I'm okay with more Gasol after this year. It'd be kind of a bummer if this was his last year with the team, because he rules and he's so fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I like, you know, that there's like a little clip of him celebrating the Spanish national team's victory by chugging like a little can of, I don't even know what it is, I guess it's maybe beer, but it's like the size of a Red Bull can. So I like, you know, his conception of like the scale of those two victories. Like, you know, one obviously justified him chugging a bottle of rosé, and the other like a Red Bull can of beer. Like, yeah. Yeah, I think that's, you know, he demonstrated a clear understanding of the value of those two respective titles. But all the respect in the world to him, and I, like you, am looking forward to watching him play another season in a Raptors uniform.
It's going to be fun, man. I'm sure we'll check in over the course of the season to talk about what Gasol and the rest are doing. But until then, Joe, where can people find you?
People can find me at The Score app. The Score website, on Twitter at Joey_W. I post most of my content there. I'm going to be rolling out some season preview content in the coming weeks, and you can subscribe to Pound the Rock as well, my NBA podcast with fellow The Score writer Joseph Cusciaro. And yeah, that's about it.
It's very good. Listen to it. You can find me at Woodley Sean. You can subscribe, rate, review, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. And that is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time with another episode of Locked On Raptors.